Brady takes a gun snap, quick throw near side. It's picked off. Janoris Jenkins, 15, 10, 3, 2, 1. Touchdown. Janoris Jenkins, pick six.
That's Tom Brady throwing a pick six in his debut with the Buccaneers, a frustrating loss to the Saints. Just one part of a delightfully strange start for the NFL. Some superstars were shaking off the rust. Others haven't missed a beat. Today, Bill Barnwell breaks down week one with an eye on quarterbacks. And he sizes up the magically dysfunctional draft class of 2018. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, September 14th. This is ESPN Daily. Bill Barnwell, it is 11:32 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday night. I am standing in my kitchen because my wife's closet, where I usually record, has been claimed on account of her quote-unquote needing to sleep. So when are you going to get to bed tonight?
The goal is always by sunrise.
Bill Barnwell is an old friend of ESPN Daily and the host of the Bill Barnwell Show. This is his first of 18 overnight shifts as the NFL season begins.
So probably around 5 a.m. At least we have a topic for my column tomorrow, and at least we have some fun stuff to talk about. I feel like it was a really interesting week one.
We're going to bypass the game we just watched because Cowboys-Rams, yeah, America's going to talk about that. Yeah, America's going to be variously mad about whether that pass interference call was really a pass interference call. But you can go elsewhere for that, because I want peak Bill Barnwell to talk to me about quarterbacks. Let's get into this enormous marquee game that also was an enormous midlife crisis, Bill. Because here we had 43-year-old Tom Brady, who didn't just debut as a Buccaneer. He debuted against the Saints and 41-year-old Drew Brees, making this the oldest quarterback matchup, apparently, in the last 50 years of regular season NFL games. New Orleans won this game pretty comfortably, 34-23. But the question I think everybody cares about mostly concerns these two 40-something Hall of Famers, who looked better, or I guess at least less creaky.
The old creakiness scale. Yeah, it's weird to say, given that the Saints won and scored 27 points on offense, which is pretty good. But I really think Brady looked better on the whole than Drew Brees. Brees had two would-be interceptions dropped. I know Brady did have two picks. He had another interception saved by a penalty. Had some very questionable throws in the red zone. And so much of what the Saints did in this game were on screens and quick outs. Just throws that were really simple. He had a big throw to Jared Cook later in the game. But Brees' average completion, per our friend Mina Kimes, traveled just 3.2 yards in the air. So it was really, really remarkable. The sort of accuracy Brees has really made his calling card over the course of his career in New Orleans just wasn't there. The NFL's Next Gen Stats Project tracks a stat called CPOE, which is completion percentage over expectation. Basically measures a quarterback's actual completion percentage against what we kind of think they would have had based on the success of similar passes over the past few years. Brees completed 60% of his passes, which is about the borderline for acceptable. But the next-gen model expected Brees to complete 68.8% of his throws. That 8.8% difference is the third worst mark for any quarterback in week one. And if you don't believe me, that's fine, I understand. But both Brees and Sean Payton said after the game that they both sucked.
Well, if you ask me how I felt like I played, I'd probably say I played awful as well. Go.
So I feel a little better about thinking he didn't play all that well. Obviously, it was enough for them to win in week one, but I think it's something to monitor as you watch the Saints in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and so to clarify for our listeners out there, there is CPOE, a very advanced acronym, and then there is just the word sucked, which is not an acronym and is self-explanatory. Brady did not say that, Bill, specifically about himself, but plenty of other people certainly did, and plenty of other people certainly will. Because after rushing for this early touchdown in this game, at which point it kind of seemed like, oh, well, maybe Tom Brady is going to make a point about how very much not done he is.
Quarterback sneak by Tom Brady to the 43-year-old score. He did. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Now, spiked that ball, Tom Brady. Who says I'm 43?
This is what happens from there. He gets sacked three times. He throws an interception in the first half, and he throws a pick six in the second half. So what exactly did the Saints do to make Tom Brady look less like Tom Brady and more like this bizarro Jameis Winston character?
Honestly, I think a lot of what went wrong for the Buccaneers was self-inflicted. And one of the people you mentioned who did think that Tom Brady sucked in this game appears to be Bruce Arians, his head coach, because he pinned both interceptions on Tom Brady. The first one, according to Arians, appeared to be a miscommunication. It looked like Mike Evans sight adjusted his route for the coverage he was facing, cut off his route shorter than Brady was expecting. Brady threw a deeper pass, was pretty obviously intercepted. That should go away with time. That's just a, you know, sort of a quarterback coming into a new scheme after seemingly 75 years in the same scheme with the same coaches. The second pick was Brady having a little too much confidence in himself. The Bucs had a screen dialed up on the backside of the screen. Brady had the option to throw a quick out to the opposite sideline. So from the left hash mark to the right sideline. That's the sort of throw maybe you're confident making in your 20s. Maybe if you're, you know, Patrick Mahomes, maybe if you're Jameis Winston, for example, if you have a really strong arm, you can make that throw and have the zip to make that pass. Tom Brady did not have the zip to make that pass, and Janoris Jenkins jumped it for a pick six. You sort of naturally hope those sort of decisions will get ironed out as Brady grows more comfortable in Arians' scheme. But remember, I mean, this is a guy who, according to our reporting, was once upset for not winning Patriot of the Week in practice. You can imagine how he might feel about Bruce Arians throwing him underneath the bus after this loss.
Yeah, Tom Brady, super pliable, except when it comes to very fake awards handed out by emotionally withholding father figures. So you are still, in the end, saying that Brady did look better than Breeze, though. Where would the silver lining be for Bucs fans who did go all in on Tom Brady as this messianic figure?
Okay, so I think he was better than his numbers indicated. And the biggest reason why is that the Saints kind of beat up his receivers in this game. I mean, they committed four pass interference penalties for 101 yards. Add those numbers to Brady's totals. He has 340 yards on 40 attempts. That's 8.5 yards per attempt. That's pretty good. That's one of the best marks you would see on a typical week. So I liked a lot of the passes he did make. Obviously, there were some issues. The interceptions came up. The Saints are a tough defense. I think it's certainly fair to say Mike Evans was not 100% and looked it during the game. Brady is going to be okay. I think he has to kind of just iron out some of those decisions that he made in week one.
So it was a win on the books for New Orleans. It felt like an even bigger win for New England. And that's even before considering New England's actual win in the game they played. Because the aforementioned father figure, Bill Belichick, he has heaped praise, noticeable praise, Bill, on Brady's replacement, Cam Newton, all offseason. But Cam was still this enormous question mark entering this game. An enormous yellow sockless question mark, it turned out, with a double-breasted suit and a bow tie and this giant, presumably very expensive hat and a leather briefcase. But a question mark nonetheless.
Just want to point out, Pablo, you forgot about the BAM shoes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. These immaculate shoes that had the word BAM in like comic book font right over the toes.
I think what's telling us that would be the most significant fashion choice I would ever make in my entire life. And that was just like fifth on the list for Cam. So what we saw on the field from Cam Newton, he was playing in a scheme that resembled something like the old Cam Newton offense. The Patriots relied on Newton as a designed runner. He carried the ball 15 times for 75 yards and 2 touchdowns.
To him, rolls to the right. Cam's going to run it to the 10, outside to the 5. Newton to the pylon.
Got
touchdown!
It.
Yeah. Patriots, his second in his New England debut.
And in both cases, what we saw was a Patriots offense that was built around creating opportunities for Cam to run. In the red zone, we saw them spread out the Dolphins by going with multiple wide receivers, moving a running back into the backfield, and then using that open space for Cam to run against a light box with only 6 people around the line of scrimmage for Cam to run at. And that was a very successful tactic for the Patriots. And as a passer, we saw him run a lot of the same stuff the Patriots ran with Brady. They have this play action concept they've been running for decades. They stole it from the Niners, who were running it in the 90s. Basically, you're just going to run play action. You're going to pull your guard across the formation to give the linebacker a false key, confuse the linebacker, and then they just pop a pass to Julian Edelman behind that linebacker in that exposed zone for a big game. They ran it with Brady for 25 years. They've just now run it with Cam as well, and it works, it turns out. But more than anything, Pablo, I think the fact that the Patriots were willing to use Cam the way they did is pretty telling. They weren't trying to change him into some different kind of quarterback. They weren't running some modified version of their scheme with Brady. Cam looked healthy as a runner and a thrower, and the Patriots were confident enough that he would stay healthy to build their offense around him as if there were no concerns about his health at all.
All right, coming up. The rest of this inaugural NFL weekend was kind of shaped by the young quarterbacks from a particular draft class, for better and for worse.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Bill, your column today is this dissection of the most surprising quarterback performances in week one. And I love this, not just because it's a great column, but because it allows us, as fate would have it, to hold something of a reunion for the NFL draft class of 2018. So let's start with Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick in that draft. Still hasn't been able to click with Odell Beckham in Cleveland. They were held to precisely 6 points by the Ravens yesterday. And Baker's final line reads 21 of 39 for 189 yards with a QBR of 65. All this after a brutal season last year. So what were some of Baker's biggest problem areas on Sunday?
Oh, geez. I mean, everything is that that's a viable answer here, unfortunately. No quarterback does well under pressure, but Mayfield was 2 of 6 for 13 yards and 2 sacks when the Ravens pressured him. He threw an early interception on a play where he just didn't see a defender undercutting a pass.
Baker Mayfield to throw his pass. It is deflected and picked off at the 42-yard line.
And hey, maybe the game would have gone differently if one key moment had changed even a tiny bit. The Browns were down 17-6, but they had a 3rd-and-2 from the Baltimore 23-yard line, only for Odell Beckham to drop a would-be first down. Cleveland missed the ensuing field goal. Ravens scored a touchdown to go up 24-6, and the two teams never looked back, heading in opposite directions. I mean, Odell Beckham was an absolute game-changing, world-class superstar wide receiver with the Giants, but that was 3 years ago. In this game, he was targeted 10 times and caught just 3 passes for 22 yards. This was supposed to be the year where a healthy Beckham and a refocused Mayfield returned to form. That was not the case yesterday.
I have to imagine there are so many different sliding doors type of moments that Baker Mayfield looks back and reconsiders. The other quarterback in the game, the guy who bookended the first round of that 2018 draft with Baker Mayfield, the reigning NFL MVP, Lamar Jackson, who had another stellar season opener with the Ravens dropping 38 on Baker's Browns. Here he comes throwing 3 touchdowns, 0 picks, goes 20 of 25, and he pops up on Instagram Live afterwards, Bill, wearing this bright green mask and a matching green shirt that was fully unbuttoned, just billowing in the wind like he's a Backstreet Boy. So out of all that, what impresses you about Lamar Jackson?
Pablo, unfortunately, my mind has now gone to a place where I wonder where Lamar Jackson has heard of the Backstreet Boys, and that gets me very
oh,
sad.
No.
As an older person, that makes me very upset.
Yes, yeah, same.
The thing I think people underestimate about Lamar Jackson, this guy is a really effective traditional drop back quarterback. I think there's this perception that he's limited if you take away his legs or if he can't run. He's going to get figured out. That seems to be the classic trope for quarterbacks who are mobile, that they're one piece of tape or one bad game away from being figured out and reduced to a mediocrity, and a cautious tale to tell people about how you can't trust mobile running quarterbacks. That's not the case. Lamar Jackson is a very good traditional dropback quarterback who, on the side, in addition to being a fantastic dresser, just happens to be the most devastating running quarterback the league has ever seen.
Man. Well, speaking of devastation, let's talk about the other, even more chaotic matchup between quarterbacks from this draft class. Because when I say devastation, I mean Sam Darnold versus Josh Allen. Bill, Darnold is done seeing ghosts, ostensibly. He is healed from mono, ostensibly. It is a whole new year for the Jets, ostensibly. And yet everything kind of already seems diseased. Like, talking to Jets fans who are friends of mine, like, they understand the Bills' defense is tough. But apart from that very nice 69-yard touchdown to Jamison Crowder.
Seven quick pass to Crowder, trying to get him out in space. Slips a tackle, and there he goes! Crowder breaks free! It's a foot race, and Crowder is in there!
All eyes now turn to Sam Darnold and Jets head coach Adam Gase. So Gase is theoretically a guy who's supposed to whisper them into something like improvement. But are you surprised now that this offense still looks this decrepit?
I think I want to be nice and make excuses. And there are some you could make. I mean, this was the first game for an offensive line with four new starters. Two of Darnold's three-wide receivers were on different teams in 2019. Chris Herndon, the tight end, barely played last season. Yes, of course, we're going up against one of the best defenses in football, as you mentioned. And hey, I mean, Darnold's interception was no coach's fault. He made a horrific decision. The sort of throw that most children playing Madden would know not to make is the kind of pass Sam Darnold made. When it goes to Adam Gase, I mean, should we have any reason to expect this offense to be good? Darnold hasn't been effective for any significant stretch of time so far as a pro. Adam Gase was a great coordinator when he had, late prime Peyton Manning at quarterback, but without a Hall of Famer to operate the plays Adam Gase is running, his offenses have ranked 27th, 26th, and 31st by Football Outsiders DVOA statistic. And Gase came out before week one and said the offense was absolutely atrocious last year, which is accurate and fair to say. He ran the best offense he could have last year, and it didn't work. And in week one, they ran the same offense, and it looked equally as bad.
I feel like the Jets have a reasonable shot, based on everything you said, at just leading the league in memes. The other way to frame Bill's Jets is pretty meme-worthy, too, because Josh Allen versus Sam Darnold is one way to see it, but Josh Allen versus Josh Allen feels like a worthy lens to see this game through, because Josh Allen had some extraordinarily Josh Allen moments with a couple terrifying fumbles.
Allen running left. He's going to keep it himself. Lost the football. Ball comes loose. Second fumble today for Josh Allen, and it's the second lost fumble as the Jets recover.
But Allen also had the first 300-yard passing game of his career. He also ran for a touchdown.
Allen, he's got a wide-open lane and a Buffalo touchdown.
And that maybe could be a strategy that these Bills might want to pursue more and more if it doesn't end up killing their franchise quarterback in the process. So how would you say, all in all, that the great Josh Allen experiment is going right now?
Well, Pablo, great television is episodic, right? Makes you want to tune in week after week to see what changes, what happens, who improves. And Josh Allen does that. Every week, I am excited to watch Josh Allen play quarterback because I don't know what is going to happen next, even from drive to drive or play to play. Anything is possible with Josh Allen. He is the chaos quarterback. Allen did make some great throws to Stephon Diggs. He carried a huge workload as a runner. He carried the ball 14 times for 57 yards and a touchdown. He was a very productive player. And yet, at the same time, he fumbled twice, had at least two would-be interceptions in the red zone dropped. He left three more touchdowns on the field with subpar throws, and two of them were on the exact same sort of play concept. But it's hard to watch him week after week and describe him or sum him up as anything more than a work in progress.
So let's wrap up with the other Josh here. Josh Rosen, because Rosen is a member of the Tampa Bay Bucks practice squad, his third team in 3 years. He was drafted 10th overall, and TV cameras found him yesterday just sitting by himself in the stands of the Superdome. So when you see Josh Rosen now, Bill, what do you see?
I see something to aspire to. I don't know about you, Pablo, but I mean, in the past, I did feel some sense of pity for Rosen, a guy who started his career behind two awful offensive lines on rebuilding rosters. But after 2020 happened, I'm really more jealous of Josh Rosen than anything else. He lives in warm weather. He's making nearly $4 million in guaranteed money. He has access to daily COVID testing. Those are three great things.
So, considering the state of our world, what do you think this first NFL Sunday has told us, if anything, about how the rest of this season is going to be like?
It was normal. I mean, after the first 5 or 10 minutes, after the first glimpse of every empty stadium, it was pretty much back to normal as a spectator sport. There's going to be this weird 8-hour window on Sundays where we're all going to be able to sit on our couches like normal and watch the NFL, strangely.
Yeah, when I can once again develop the familiar lower back pain that only attends 8 consecutive hours on a gloriously, like, more than mediocre NFL Sunday. This felt familiar in ways that I welcome, even if I also feel incredibly old.
At least you're with me with remembering the Backstreet Boys, Pablo.
Bill, you know that I want it that way. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thanks, Pablo.
Coming up next, while crowd noise was pumped into the games we watched this weekend, I am valuing the power of the human organism like never before.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. The Lakers easily eliminated the Rockets in 5 games this weekend. And during the third quarter, I heard ESPN announcer Mike Breen do something that was very unlike Mike Breen.
To Gordon. Gordon trying to get going. That's good. His second three-pointer.
That was an air ball, Mike.
He missed it. I look like from behind the plexiglass, that one in. I want to see the replay.
Eric Gordon holding that follow-through for you.
Oh, my goodness.
You should have hit him with a bang on that, too. That would have been even better.
I have the direct line, a perfect direct line on that shot.
Jeff Van Gundy, you'll notice, knew it was an air ball immediately. Which is why, as his colleagues proceeded to show the replay for all of America, Mike Breen said this.
Bang!
That's not even close. That's a foot short. But it is great. The rim, kind of like the...
No, Mike, you're at, like a player now. You're trying to explain something that's inexplicable. Just say I was wrong and move on.
Believe me, I know I was wrong.
First, I commend the way Breen owned that instead of denying and doubling down. Second, listen now to how Mark Jackson stood up for his teammate.
Oh, he's been watching his clips, man. There's an outstanding clip on the internet of Mike and his calls.
That's good.
And his calls. Incredible. I actually watched it like 10 times with tears in my eyes. We're working with greatness, my friend.
So I agree with Mark Jackson. Mike Breen is greatness. Mike Breen has provided some of the most joyful calls in basketball history. And I was thinking about what may have thrown him off with that air ball here. Because, yeah, announcers scan the court with an eagle eye, but they also listen. They ride the crowd noise like a wave, and their voices swell and crash along with that human tide. Here's what it usually sounds like in the arena when Mike Breen goes bang.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang!
I must admit that until this weekend, I was numb to just how numb sports sounds right now compared to how electric we used to have it. I'd overlooked crowd acoustics, the actual sound of us. Because watching from home, it seemed at first like fans really could be replaced by a soundboard DJ. It seemed like fake people would work well enough. But as the NBA playoffs have proceeded, these virtual crowds have sounded virtually anemic. And the NFL games yesterday sounded synthetic at best and conspicuously hollow at worst. My ears were left wanting. In fact, I went looking for that Mike Breen mixtape yesterday that Mark Jackson said he watched over and over. I went looking for that human tide to wash over us once again.
To the Bulls foul.
No.
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down and the game is tied. Looking. Finds Rose. Rose trying to get open. Fires away. Bang! It's over! The Bulls win at the buzzer! Catches, puts up a three, won't go, rebound Box, back out to Allen, his three-pointer, bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining!
It has been so long since we've all been that joyous. It's been so long since we've heard a moment of unity like that. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.